they asked me how many music videos could you make. I was like, 3 months. If I can make one, that would be good.
No, I won't make you sing it. Don't worry. I didn't ask if you could sing it well.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mullman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
Hey, Justin, I want to chat with you and tell you about this next episode where I met with Saikusan. He is not just a mentor of the 2D animation program at CG Spectrum, which is how I met him, but he's also an amazing freelance animation filmmaker, and he's done some really cool projects. He's worked for the BBC, Netflix, MTV, Samsung, Adidas, and Gucci. And one of my favorite projects that he did was he did this Katy Perry music video. It was like a fully animated Katy Perry music video that he directed as well, and he was like the creative director of that music video. Wow. Which is pretty cool.
It's a wild portfolio. So yeah, I'm anxious to see all what he's got to bring.
He's pretty cool. I'm so excited.
Things have changed a lot. I mean, the market, the industry has changed. When I started, 2D animation was still very much dominated by Disney in terms of like in the industry of the kind of jobs I could get. It was the style, but it was dying out pretty quickly because of 3D, because 3D was coming in. And I loved 3D when I was a kid. I started really early on doing some 3D on my Amiga back in the days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used Lightwave as a package. My first jobs for a long time were a lot of 3D, but as the industry was changing, I wanted to do a bit of everything. That was my thing. I wanted to be a generalist, and I was struggling to be able to find jobs where I could do a bit of everything. I found that I was hired to do one task and nothing else. And also I felt like I was spreading my skills a little too much. I wanted to do 2D animation. Mm. I wanted to do 3D. I wanted to do all aspects of it all. But it's hard to be good at everything. It's really hard. And if you want to push yourself, then I guess you gotta have to make some decisions, some choices of what you're going to, where you're going to apply your skills, where you're going to put the effort, you know. So I decided one day that mm-hmm. I was going to push for 2D animation, even though 2D was still struggling to become big. And then since then, it became big again. There's plenty of 2D work, but there's new style around. So it's not just Disney anymore. We've got all this blend of Western and Japanese animation, but also European animation that mm-hmm. has made a mark on the market. So I enjoyed the diversity a lot, actually. At first, I thought I was going to have to animate, you know, animal characters like some bunnies and some tigers and things on for Kellogg's or something. And but nowadays, you can do much, much cooler stuff. I'm not saying it's bad, but it felt back in the days that was the main thing. That was essentially what you would be doing.
Yeah, and like your style is so unique, I think, too. Like you can definitely feel some of those traditional types of like skills and styles in your work and like the way that some of your characters look when you draw them. But it feels more modern and like it's interesting. It's kind of cool. And you get to work on different types of projects and like adult kind of projects and things that aren't always like cute and childish and sweet. It's like, it looks kind of sweet, but it's like dark and fun and sexy. And, you know, I love that. You don't really see that as much, especially in, you know, entry level work, like, cause people are so inspired by Disney. Like I was the same, I think, you know, reading about your background and hearing about how you got started, it was like, yeah, you know, inspired by Disney and this, and but you don't really think that it's a real job. Like I remember watching the mm-hmm. like behind the scenes of The Lion King and be like, oh wow, there's like people working in the studio and like all they're doing is drawing all day, and I love drawing too, so I was like, wow, that's so cool. But yeah, my parents didn't work in that field, so I just didn't think it was possible, you know? And even my teachers in high school didn't really guide me in that direction. It was like a little bit strange because people don't really know like how to get in, you know?
I remember when I was a kid, I was at school and they organized this event for the kids to go and discover a job or something like that. So the idea was that you could tell the school, yeah, I want to know about this job. And the school will organize you to meet a professional in that field for just an hour or two to get to wherever they are. And that was great. And I was like, okay, I need to think about this. I asked for an architect. I said, I want to know what it's like to be an architect, because it's a mix of understanding volume and geometry and shapes. There's an artistic side of things, and also a construction side of things. You need to be a bit of an engineer. You need to build things. And that really inspired me. I was like, this is bridging two things I really like. So I did it. Eventually met this architect, went to his office, and I saw his beautiful drawing table. This back in the days, they were still drawing things with, you know, pencils. But so I was born, my feet were, you know, in a world of paper and pencil. But at the same time, at home, I had this Amiga, and I was doing some 3D stuff. And that was, you know, just at that time when things were completely changing, we were about to be reinvented. Anyway, I decided to go into architecture. I graduated in architecture. I'm an architect, but I never worked a day in architecture. The thing is that I love the studies. It was fun. But during the studies, I discovered animation, and I decided to try animation. But I remember during the school already, it was happening in architecture, just like in animation. We had these computers in the school, and teachers were teaching us how to use these special pens to make the thickness of the walls, and teachers teaching us how to draw a perspective, you know, how to have the focal point and whatnot, and even how to shade. So like, imagine drawing a beautiful facade of a building and how to shade everything geometrically accurate, you know, by tracing everything. It was the traditional way for doing things. And funny enough is that they were teaching us this thing, but by the time we finished the studies, that was over already. Like, drawing on a paper was finished. It was kind of strange to study this and then only to just give it up right away. But that was the reality of the time changing. And animation was the same. So I started animating on paper myself for fun. I went to school for 2 years and I learned everything on paper. But I had a computer at home, and I bought my first Wacom tablet. It was like A5 format, a tiny little tablet. And I started doing it with this. And I was like going back to school and say, hey, guys, have you tried this thing? It's amazing. And I was into 3D, and yes, I went into 3D, but I guess I had to go into this world of animation not knowing anybody who could tell me this is how you do it. So I remember one day just looking out there, thinking maybe I could learn this thing, maybe I can learn how to be an animator. And I discovered that there were schools. I was like, oh my God, they teach how to do animation? It was new to me. Yeah.
I know. The same thing happened to me. I was like, oh, wait, there's actually a college. Like, I don't have to pick math or history or something that I hated. You know, I was like, oh, there's this like multimedia course I can take. Like, that sounds cool.
Yeah, part of me was kind of thinking, oh, if I knew that 5 years ago, I would have gone into animation directly, maybe, instead of doing architecture. Honestly, it's I don't regret it, because I learned how to manage a project. And it was very interesting to see how I transferred those skills from architecture to animation. Managing a project, it means that you're given a brief, you know, you have a plot, a land, you know, and you have to deal with the surface, the whatever building needs to do, how many people, room you have to put into this place, what are the design constraints, the height. There's usually a lot of reglementation that goes with architecture. And you have to think about this, plan, bring everything together. And creating an animation film, for example, is very much similar. You have to bring in everything. There's a story, there's music, there's actors, there's you know, your storyboard, your skills as an animator, designs. And you have to bring all this together and make a project that works. So I managed to transfer those skills from architecture to animation, and that really helped me, actually. From the beginning, I wanted to actually be a director and tell my own stories. And I'm still trying to do this in a way, because it's a different thing. It's a different job than being an animator. Right now, I'm an animator mainly, so I work for other people. I work for other people's ideas and other people's projects. I love it. Don't get me wrong. This is great. And what I love particularly about my industry is that it's changing all the time. I get loads of variety in my projects, loads of different clients, different styles. And this is really, really something that keeps me going. But as I'm getting a little bit older and more confident with my style, and also I'm building my connections, you know, I've got clients and other animators that I work with.
People who trust you.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a client that comes in to me and say, I want to do this. I know who to call. You know, I've got like my Mission Impossible team that I just got, I need this guy. Let's get on and do this. So network is like extremely important to be able to take on projects. I'm constantly changing. The market is constantly changing. So I try to adapt. At the same time, I try to do my own things. So, like, for example, last year when I finally got to do work on music videos, that was a great thing, great format for me, because music videos are short. You get to tell a story. You don't have to worry too much, because there's already a lot of information that's given through a song. You know, a song has a story on its own. It has a feel to it. And you can draw inspiration from that. And it's a lot easier than just coming out with a story out of nowhere, you know. And you know already that this where this is going to go. So that helps.
I've worked on some music videos in the past, kind of at the very beginning of my career. So I was like very young artist in my early 20s. And I worked for a very small boutique studio where the owner of this, there's only like five of us working there, like total, including the owners. It was like very, very small. Sometimes we would hire some freelancers to help us. And the owner, we would basically work on some commercials and advertising stuff, but it was mostly to like feed his passion of music videos. He's a music video director, and we were a VFX studio, and so he would kind of work with these like smaller Canadian local budgets and be like, okay, well, all the VFX is going to be done by my team, so I know how much we can, you know, afford and what we're capable of. We don't have to outsource that stuff to, you know, different animators or people. He's always had at the back of his head, like, we're going to do all this stuff ourselves. But I remember working with him on some director's treatments, because I really liked organizing stuff, and he was so busy, and so he would write these ideas down and send me like a text document of kind of his like process and like the story he was planning to tell. Sometimes he would send me some reference images as well of like, okay, this is the feeling I want to go for this this video. And sometimes we would talk over it together and kind of like develop a story. Like, the more I did this with him, it started as just, hey, can you help me put this into a PDF so I can like present this director's treatment to someone? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. I can make it look pretty. And then it turned into more of this collaboration where we would talk about stuff together. And he's like, what do you think about this idea? And we would kind of go back and forth like, oh, how about if the characters did this or that? And it was so much fun. But do you find that, you know, when you do stuff like this, have they come to you, like for the Katy Perry music video, for example, do they come to you with a sort of loose idea? Or did they just say, hey, we want something animated, here's the song?
I think there was a sense of urgency with this particular music video. It was not actually just that one, it was the whole album. So if we go back in time, at that time there was the pandemic that was hitting, it was right at the beginning. So she was, Katy Perry was heavily pregnant, and she wanted to release an album. Right. She was going to release the album when her daughter Daisy was going to be born. That was the plan. So like, you know, full ons, like let's just do everything together. I mean, that takes a lot of time.
That's a strict schedule. That's a very strict schedule.
I take my hat to her. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, crazy stress, I imagine, to deal with. So when it came to releasing music videos, she kind of had to rely on other people to help her with this. You know, one of the reasons was two things. First, she was heavily pregnant. It's hard to make music videos and dance around when you're heavily pregnant. But she did a few music videos while she was pregnant, which is crazy. And the other thing is that because the pandemic was hitting, They could not put people together to make a normal music video like you would do with dancers, etc.
Yeah, especially at the beginning of the pandemic.
Right, that's it. Everybody was locked in and nothing was happening. It was actually a crazy year because the beginning of the year was like every job was being cancelled. Nobody knew what was going to happen. But there was this strange thing that for the animation industry, there was a silver lining to it. Somehow, because all these actors could not get into studios, a lot of companies turned to animation. And suddenly, within a few months, everybody was asking for animation to be done. And Katy Perry thought the same way. They were like, oh, why don't we do animated music videos? And what happened is I was working for a studio and I was already doing a music video for them. That was for Georgia Smith, a British singer. She's doing really well. She's quite famous now. And it was a great story. And I was already very much involved in that project. I was doing design, character designs, storyboards and animation with a team. And then so Katy Perry eventually, she did not contact me directly. She contacted me through Partisan, which is a creative agency. They're based in LA. Here's the thing. If you're online, you can be found out. And somehow they found out my work. And they were like, we're looking for something in your style. Would you be available? And when they say it was for Katy Perry, I was like, okay, I need to make myself available. So that was a problem. I was working, right? And I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? The first thing though is that they did not offer me the job. They offered me to pitch. Okay. And pitching is about, when you're pitching, basically you're offering an idea, a concept, and other people are doing the same thing at the same time, you're not sure you're not going to get the job. But they were quite, they needed a lot of animation to be made in just a few months. They had like a 3-month period before the release of the album. And they asked me, how many music videos could you make? I was like, 3 months? If I can make one, that would be good. what I did is that I pitched for 5 songs. They gave me 5 songs. I was like, I'm going to pitch for every single one of them. And I was really excited. I took some time off. I worked the evenings. And I spent about a day on each song to create a design, an image, that would look like what the video would look like. And then I wrote a little story, just half a page, a few lines, telling what was going to happen in the music video. And I thought to myself, Katy Perry is someone who's very creative and very free and open. I was like, I think I can go all out on these stories. I can be very kind of colorful. And every story had a very different angle. I was like, I'm going to tell 5 completely different stories, like different universe, different timeline, different kind of characters. And hopefully one of them will land, you know. And so I listened to the songs so much that I actually liked the songs. And I was like, I had my favorite song. I was like, ah, wouldn't it be great if I got that one? Anyway, I was like, it'd be great if I got any of them. So eventually I sent it out and I got a response pretty quickly because I think they were quite happy with what I sent. And they said, can you do this one, which was Cry About It Later. And that was my favorite song. So I was like, hey,
oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah.
That was great. So anyway.
Do you still know all the words to that song?
Yeah, I can sing along, I guess. I can sing along easily.
Yeah, like if you hear it, yeah. No, I won't make you sing it, don't worry. I didn't ask if you could sing it well. Only if you remember the words. Because I remember with some of the music videos I worked on, it's like bands that I didn't really care about. Like I wouldn't normally listen to this music, but once in a while, I mean, it's been a while now, but one of the songs, maybe like a month ago, I heard a song on the radio and I was like, oh my God, turn it up. I told my friend, I'm like, turn up the song. Oh. I know all the words to this. They're like, what is this weird pop song? Why do you like this? Like, this is so not you and like what you listen to. Like, how do you even know all the words? It's like, oh, cause I was like editing this. I remember like I had to sync up all of the, because it wasn't animated. We were like filming music videos. It was live action. But I was the person that would like sync up all of the takes to the audio so that then we could like cut in the different angles or like different parts and like match it to the song. And so it's like over and over, just like watching and listening to like the same song. It'll be stuck in my head forever, you know, like
Well,
I'm sure 20 years from now, you'll probably still know all the words, whether you like it or not. Like you'll hear a song, you know, cry about it later. And then
It's true. And actually, because I like the song, I was like, I was thinking, am I going to hate it by the end of this job? You know, because that went on for 3 months, you know, and I'd listen to it many times every day. But actually, no, that did not happen. I still like the song. So that's cool. Interestingly, for the creative process, it went rather well, to be fair, because I was a bit scared that, I've never worked for Katy Perry before, but I've worked for other clients, many of them. I talked to Patterson and I said, look, there's very little time to do this. Katy Perry has approved the designs and the story. So I'm going to consider that this is been approved and we're going to roll with this. We're not going to start a whole design process for everything again and again, because otherwise we'll never finish this project. But as it turns out, Katy Perry is very laid back and very trusting, I have to say. She only made me change a couple of things, which I was really happy about. There was a character, one of the characters, because there are quite a few characters in it, and she didn't like his design. It was like, try something else. Actually, two characters now, think about it. So I sent her a modified one that was an easy change. And the other one, she wasn't sure what she wanted. So I was like, okay, you don't like it, but what do you want? Do you want me to go a different direction? It was like, just do your thing. I was like, okay. So I came up with a selection of new characters quickly. And I said, pick one. She picked one. And that was done. and the other thing was the ending. So I had this sort of build up through the story, and I had a different ending at the beginning. And it was going down very dark, actually. And she was going down to hell instead of going sort of kind of going up into the heavens. In my first story, she was going down to hell. And I think it was a bit too dark for her.
I was like, different.
Okay. it's completely. It's like the twist.
I think she ends up going to a party instead.
Well, it was a party in hell, actually. Sorry, I should say it was still fun. Because she was sort of she was going out with the devil for having a hell of a party, if you want. That was the idea. But I think maybe it was still too dark for us. So I was thinking, okay, I need to think about a new idea. And the funny thing is that my wife was looking at what I was doing every day. I was telling her about the project. And she was telling me, oh, come on, can I have a character in there? Could I be in the video? It's like, you know, you can just draw me and put me in the background somewhere. Like I could be a character in the background somewhere. I was like, oh, okay, sure, I can do that. You know, I can. So I was going to sort of caricature my wife a little bit and put her as a character.
Little Easter egg, right?
Yeah. And what happened is that at the same time, I had to find this. And I was like, okay, Katy Perry, she's done this song back in the days, I Kissed a Girl. And she appeals a lot to the queer community and all the LGBTQ, basically. And I was like, maybe I need to play a bit more. I had some things that already in the story kind of touching on this, but, you know, lightly. I was like, okay, maybe instead of going out with a guy at the end, maybe she should go out with a girl. And I said to my wife, how would you feel about your character kissing Katy Perry? And she was like, yeah. she was like, yeah, that's great. Okay, cool. Let's do this. Like, so,
she was into it a little too quickly.
Basically, she thought that was great. Okay, I'm cool. And I think she loved the idea more than anything. And I played along with this. I said, all right. So I created this sort of angel character based on my wife. My wife, she's of Indian origins, so that's why the character looks like she was of Indian origins as well. And she was like, "Oh, but you need to make sure it's me." So she has like a ring that she loves, and I give the character the same ring to make sure, you know, she points out the ring. So every time she watches, she's showing the video to one of her friends. She's like, "That's my ring. It's my ring. It's me." Anyway, so this is how my wife made it into the video.
That's so cool.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games.
Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you.
Do you find that it's a lot more comfortable for you now to do these directing jobs and to have that role where you're not just, you know, executing a creative idea, but you're actually the one thinking of it? Like, is it a different type of stress, or because of your experience, you're like, oh, I can do this now. Like, you trust yourself more.
I think so. I think this thing's build through time, you know, you build that confidence through time. In the beginning, of course, I was less confident. And also, I think, you know, I've been working with some studios for quite a bit. So when I work with these people again and again, they know me, I know them, and they know what I can do. And they decide to give me more important role in the productions. So they find out that I'm pretty good at doing animation, then like, do you want to try a storyboard? If they find out I'm pretty good at storyboarding, then I'm like, do you want to try design? And it grows like this, and they trust me more and more with things, and they give me more and more important jobs. I have to tell you, sometimes I was not looking for the kind of jobs that I actually got, you know. I sell myself as an animator, but people can see that I can design as well, for example. So I've had a lot of people coming to me to create illustrations or designs for animations. And I did not ask for it, but I enjoy doing it nonetheless. So when the opportunities come, I'll take it. I like a challenge, and this is always fun. I have to say, it's nicer to be, for me anyway, I enjoy being in the creative side of things, on making decisions and steering the ship, if you want, in the right direction. I really enjoy this because I guess I have my own vision of things. And if I'm given an opportunity to take things in that direction, it's satisfying, right? That's what it is. It's like, hey, because often you work for someone else and you think, oh, he's done this with this shot. You know what? I would have done it differently. But it's okay, you know, I'll do it like this. And then one day you talk to the director and say, oh, you know what, how about we do this? You know, and they go like, oh, that's a good idea. You know? So it's okay to share your ideas. Sometimes it's well received, and it's it creates new opportunities. So it's good to talk and to not be afraid to share opinions, particularly in this industry. I find there are some industries where there's a more of a hierarchy, you know, and you sort of like you are in a position and you're expected to do your job. But this, I don't know how it is in other places around the world, but in London, I find that they're quite receptive. Studios are rather small. And if you come in and you have good ideas, they're happy to listen to it. And that's a great thing. So I enjoy that. I enjoy that industry.
Yeah, I wonder if it's, I don't know if it's like a place thing or a size thing. I feel like I felt that way at that job I was telling you about, where I worked at a really small studio. And I think because there were just inherently less people, you know, they would come to me, someone, you know, who only worked one job before that, kind of fresh out of school a few years, you know, prior. And it was a shock to me when my boss, you know, the creative director would say, so what do you think? And I was like, you care what I think, you know, but it feels good. But I've seen both sides, you know, even jobs I've had after that at bigger studios, it's like, oh no, there's other people whose job it is to make the creative decisions, and people who are dictating what other people are doing, and you kind of have to follow them. And even those people have clients above them who are telling them what to do. And it's like this chain, this hierarchy, like you said, of people, which can get a little bit overwhelming. And as a junior, someone starting out, there's like very few areas where you could say, well, I think this, or have you considered this? They'd be like, no, because this is what we're doing.
It depends. It's a personality thing, right? You might be more comfortable, you know, having clear directions and just concentrating on that one task. And some people do their best work in those conditions, you know, and that's absolutely okay. Also, to be a freelancer like I am, there's uncertainties that come with this. You know, I have periods when I'm not working, and you have to be able to deal with this, with this, possibly the stress of it. You know, it's not for everybody, or it's something that maybe you need to go into slowly, or you know, try it out. At the beginning, for example, I had a part-time position, and that helped me do the transition between being an employee to being self-employed. And that was the thing for me. I discovered that was what I was comfortable with. But I know that some people love to be in a big studio, to find that place in there, to be part of a community, and to work in the longer term, you know, and create strong connections in that way. That's something else. It gives you something different, and I can understand that too. It's just not for me, maybe. That's all.
How, like, when did you start to realize that? Like, was it, sounds like it was pretty early on that you thought, oh, freelance is for me.
Yeah. I started working in France, so I started working for a studio that was in the town where I was, and I thought, for me, that was the picture that I had about how working in animation is. You just enter a studio and that's what you do. I did this for a little while. That was okay. You know, I was happy to have a job, and then eventually I had the opportunity to move from France to the UK and to London. I didn't know what to expect when I went there. I didn't know what the market was like and what kind of jobs I could find. So my idea was still simple, and I was like, okay, there's got to be jobs out there. I'm going to look for them. I'm going to apply for them, and hopefully I'll get one. And the idea was that I would work for a studio. And
what was your first job? You said you worked at a studio first.
Yeah, the French studio I worked for was called Folimage, which is a really good animation studio in France. They're based in Valence, and they do feature films for kids and TV series as well. And they have a beautiful hand-drawn style, and often they shade their work with crayons, and so you have a texture in the shading. And my first job was to shade characters, so I had a day of training to make sure that I was doing it right, and I had a test to pass, and they were happy with what I did, so they would give me piles.
Just one day of training.
Yeah, just one day, I guess. Maybe it would take more time. But I knew how to draw, I guess. I was quite comfortable with a pencil, so for me it was okay. But you had to do gradient shading, and the paper had to be the same paper, you know. So you always get the same grain, and the animation frame rate was quite low. So you know, because you get a boil if you get a lot of hand drawn things, but it had a low frame rate, which meant it didn't boil too much. But it relied a lot on us, the artist, to make sure that each frame was close enough to each other so they didn't boil too much. And I would take those piles of paper, go to the studio, go home, and just do hours and hours of this. I have to say, I enjoyed it for like about a week, and then I was like, oh my god, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. Please give me some other job. I love drawing, but just doing shading day in day out, that was a bit too much for me. So when my wife, actually, who's British, got an opportunity to go to London, we discussed it. We're like, okay, let's go to London. I know there's some British studios there. Oh, I mean, they do great animation. I'd be happy to give it a shot. So I gave up my job and we went for it. And I got a job through the small studio that was starting up. And it was a bit of crazy, actually. They were ambitious, and they were right in the heart of London. It was on Oxford Street. And I was really happy to go right at the center of London, just going there. And, you know, it was buzzing everywhere. And we were getting these interesting jobs. I was doing some stuff for MTV right from the start. I was like, oh, this is great. I'm doing some stuff for MTV. Oh. But the studio was okay, but I felt like it was not quite the studio for me. So I was looking for something else after a while. And at this point, I did not know that a lot of animators in London were actually freelancers. It took me a while to realize that was an option. And it's only when I left the job that I looked around and I contacted other studios. And one of them said, do you want to come in this job as a freelancer? I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, how much do you pay? And I was like, okay, that sounds good, you know, because I didn't know at all. I was like, okay, I'm going to follow whatever they offer. And and that's how I got my first job as a freelancer. And I was like, this is good. I'm liking this. It was like maybe a month of work. And I kept trying to do this. And also at the same time, I got a part-time position for a TV channel. And what I liked about this job was actually because I was doing some programming. Like I say, I'm often up for a new challenge. And they were like, oh, do you want to do some programming on this? I was like, I was not a programmer. But I was like, I can try. I just started doing programming. And that was fun for a couple of years. And then I was like, okay, no, this was fun, but now it's time to just do what I want to do. And I went full on freelancer. And I started thinking about stopping 3D and doing 2D. But that took quite a few years. It took me 5 or 6 years before I was like, hang on, what do you want to do? 3D, 2D? You got to make a choice here. And I started removing all the 3D stuff from my showreel. And I said, I'm going to be a 2D animator now. This is what I'm going to do. And I started looking for work only as an animator, 2D animator.
Tell me a little bit more about your reel and like how you decided to direct it towards the jobs that you wanted. Like you said, you made the choice to just remove everything 3D, even if it was good. Like I'm assuming it was good, right?
Yeah, it was great. It was absolutely fabulous.
That must be tough to say, oh, I'm going to remove something from my portfolio or my reel that's actually good.
Yeah.
To take that kind of risk to like take something good away from yourself.
It's an important point, I find. Really, really important point, actually. So it's something that I've given a thought, quite a lot of thought, because, well, this is the thing, your portfolio, your showreel is what will land you a job, essentially. But the question is, what is the best strategy to help you out? Not only just to convince a client that you're good for the job, but also this will decide, and this is what's important to understand, this will decide your path. This will decide where you're going. If you're a new animator and you're doing a bit of everything, a bit of character design, a bit of background, a bit of animation, a bit of storyboard, and you don't know where you're going at the beginning, you know, you just want a job, and you're putting all of this out there, there's two problems with that. First, you're putting everything into one portfolio. It's confusing for potential employers, because usually they're looking for one profile and you're showing them 10 things and they're like, which one do you do? So if you're contacting an employer, you want to show them what they want to see. That's one important thing to understand. So it's good to separate, not put everything in the same place. This is your illustration work, your design work, your animation work. And if you're looking for design work, then just focus on employees who are looking for design work. If you're looking for animation, take your animation reel and use that. So that's why I guess I chose 2D, because I was like, do I just want a job, any job in animation, or do I want a job that I will enjoy the most? And yes, I could do 3D, and yes, I would enjoy 3D, but I know that 2D is my thing. So I realized that I was still getting 3D jobs. And as long as I'm getting 3D jobs, I'm not doing any 2D, right? So I had to be harsh with myself. I had to say, from now on, I'm going to say no to 3D jobs because this is not the direction I want to take. So yes, it was a difficult decision. And I remember having to say no to clients that I used to work with, that I liked. And occasionally I'd be like, all right, I'll help you out a little bit with this job. But I was pushing back. I was pushing back a lot. And I'm still doing this today. I still have a lot of clients coming to me for different things. And I have to say no, unfortunately, because I say, I love you guys. I love the project. It sounds really exciting. But it's just not where I want to be, you know, in 10 years from now. I want to be doing other things.
Yeah.
And then you have to ask yourself the question, is this a portfolio that I'm putting together, is this actually the best I can do? You know, when you do work on a job, you might have done a brilliant job, brilliant work on this animation, but is it really your best? What if you spend a bit of time, took some time on the weekend or take a week off, to make another kind of animation that is more personal, maybe, or that is more advanced, or where you can put more quality into it? And if you do that, then you can take that and put that in your reel, and your reel will look better for it. this is why, in fact, most of the work that is in my showreel, and I'm going back to your question, is things that I've decided to do on my spare time rather than jobs. And these get me the jobs that I want to get. If I relied only on the jobs that I've done in the past, I only put these things in my showreel, I would get similar jobs that I did in the past. But although I enjoy these jobs, now I want to go somewhere else. I want to go into doing something that's more personal. So I will put in my reel the things that I want to do. I want to say to the world, this is my reel. This is what I want to do. Please give me those jobs. This is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people can imagine themselves, you know, working with you because they say, oh, I like his style. I can see my brand, you know, being presented in this style, or I can see my song being animated in this style. You know, that's such an important point. It's not just about what you think is, you know, looks cool or what other people want you to do, or, you know, talking to a lot of junior artists, it's like, oh, well, these are my school assignments. It's like, well, do you want to just do school assignments forever? You know, like, do you want to eventually get something better, you know, and take what you've learned and actually like make something that's yours, you know, but it is difficult to make that transition sometimes for some people when they don't know what they want or if they don't know what jobs even exist, right? Like, like you said, you're like, I had no idea that all these animators were freelance. It's not until you're already working a few years that you started to realize this.
It's true. Actually, it's very telling when I tell to people that you know what, I've done this advert on TV that you're watching now, and they're like, oh really, you worked on this? And and suddenly they realize that, oh, hang on, this advert, it's an animation. Yes, you're right. A lot of people don't really think of advertising, for example, as being something that you should pay attention to. There's a lot of skills that go into doing a lot of adverts or music videos or things that are not necessarily seen as being, you know, a cinema movie or something like that, something big. People look at advertising, don't think twice about it. But there's enormous amount of talent.
Because everyone's skipping it now, too.
Yeah.
Like, everyone wants, like, I mean, at least when we were kids, like, you couldn't skip it. You could maybe change the channel, but and you go back between two shows. But now it's like everyone skips it. So it's the same thing. I have to tell students, like, don't skip the commercials. You know, if you're watching YouTube, watch the commercial and see if you see something 3D or something 2D or some funny character eating a pizza or drinking a beer. It's like, that's animated, you know?
That's right. I try to educate my friends about this, people who are not into animation at all. I say, look, pay attention. Look at this. Look how good this is. Look how amazing this animation is. I know you've been watching a Marvel movie or a Disney movie and you think, oh, this is great. But look at this. Look how good that is as well. And they've got a great team to do this. But you don't think about it because they're selling a car or they're selling a perfume or something. Yeah. No, this is actually beautiful work. And that's what I love about the advertising industry is that they push boundaries constantly. They have more freedom to create new styles and to try new things. And it's always a bubbling, very creative environment. I love that. When you go to Disney, you go more for a traditional approach to things and there's certainty into this and there's a lot of know-how and skills and it's really well crafted. But there's plenty of great animators doing other jobs. Video games. Video games are full of amazing animations. And people think of video games as just something for kids often or something that you should not look twice at. But it's a mistake. It's full of talent. So yeah, there's plenty of room for animators to do gorgeous work all around. And if you put a reel together with work that you've done on these sort of things, it would look just as good as a reel that you would have got from working at Disney or Pixar. So it should not be underrated in my view.
Yeah, like in some cases, at least within my brief work in advertising, I felt like the clients were more difficult, actually. Like they're more strict because you only have 30 seconds to make something perfect. So they're looking at every single frame to make sure that every frame is perfect. Like we do that in film too, but not as closely. Right. Like it is like every single color, the frame. It's like, what I have this story that someone I worked with told me, and they said one time a client came in for a Coca-Cola commercial. And of course, you know, with advertising, it's a lot of it is like being nice to the clients and, oh, look, we have like all Coca-Cola products here on the table for you. You know, like you have to kind of play it up a little bit with clients. Yeah. But and the client at one point held up, they took the can off the table and held it up to the screen and said, this is not the same red. Even though it's like, you know, me and you, we know that like it could be the screen calibration, it could be that's the right red. Like we took the hex code, like we know it's the right red. But yeah, those 30 seconds matter so much more. Whereas 30 seconds in a movie is kind of like, you don't think about it. It's like it's in, it's out, it's new scene, something else happens, and so you kind of forget about it. But when people are watching the same commercial over and over and over again, it's just that short little bit.
It's true that sometimes it's difficult. One of the most difficult things in advertising, I find, is when you are dealing with real characters and you want to draw a famous person. You know, for example, once I worked on an advert with Bolt, Usain Bolt. So it was a internet company, and Usain Bolt, because he's fast, he was selling how the internet speed was amazing, you know. And we had to draw Usain Bolt, and oh my god, how many I didn't do the designs, I was just animating, but I saw the designers work and how many versions of Usain Bolt they had to draw, and it was crazy until, you know, everybody was happy with it, because you have to satisfy everybody, your director on the project, the agency, and then the client, and then Usain Bolt himself. Everybody has to be like, yeah, it's good, I'm happy with it, and until you satisfied everyone, it's just not going to be okay. So these things can be quite difficult. I also worked on an advert for Wimbledon, and we had all these stars throughout. It was like the history of Wimbledon, the 30 years. It was for the 30 years of Wimbledon. Beautiful work. It was done at Nexus. The studio was called Nexus in London. And we did like every 10 seconds, you had a different decade, basically. Every time we had a different style corresponding with the style of the time. So it was very illustrative at the beginning. Then, you know, we had a more kind of psychedelic style for the 70s. And every time we had different players. And every time we had, for like, I don't know, there was like 15 of them. And we had to make sure they looked like the tennis players. Otherwise, it would not be right. These things are so challenging. But they're fun. You know, once you've done this, you're proud of yourself. Because you're like, you know, you've gone through it and you managed it, you finished it, and everybody's happy.
Do you find that when it comes to people's likeness, you know, like Serena Williams or other tennis players or the Usain Bolt thing, do you find that their feedback of, let's say they're not happy with the character, is it because it doesn't look enough like them, or because it actually looks very much like them, but maybe they don't like that about themselves, or maybe they want to look better than reality or something? Like,
yes, there's a lot of that. Yeah, you don't want to hurt their ego, of course. You want it to be recognizable, but being you know, they want to look good. But it's not just usually it's not just that person in particular. The agency also has a vision of things, and they you know, yeah, they will look for they want to see several options right from the beginning, usually, because they don't know always what they want, and they're going to know what they want when they see it. You know, this is one of those things. So you got to look for this, explore the universe of possibilities, you know, go in different directions, different styles, and they respond to these things. Oh, I like this one. I like that one. I like the nose here, but I don't like the eyes there. And then you find your way. But yeah, it is challenging. It can be disheartening sometimes. Every projects have up and downs, you know. So sometimes you really like a design, you've done something, you're proud of it, and you think, I want to push for this. I hope they like it, and then they just like they hate it, and like, oh my god, you know. And you have to start again. And they're like, oh my god, okay, I'll try something else. Do you like this? And sometimes it's a bit, you know, you're trying new things, be like, oh, you don't even like what you're doing. But But eventually you always land on something that works. And once things are settled and you're happy, then you start moving forward. Then the energy comes back.
Tell me a little bit more about that process. Like you said that it was that company Partisan. I've heard of them. They reached out to you. So you're not part of their roster. Like you weren't represented by anyone at that point, or do you have like an agency representation, or are you completely freelance?
As it stands now, I'm completely freelance, but I have some connections. So Partisan did contact me after the job. They were quite happy with the result. To be fair, everything was pretty smooth. We finished on time. KTPO was really happy with it. By the way, the day she released the album, she released that song, the song that I did on the same. So she chose that song for the release of the album. So I was really proud. Anyway, so everybody at Partisan was like, yeah, great success. Well done, you know. And they approached me and say, look, what would you consider being one of our directors? So that was new to me because I did not have an agency before. And so I had to think about it for months, actually, because that comes with constraints and you know, you kind of have a contract, an agreement. And so they want me to be a director for them. That meant that technically I could not do much directing work for other people. And I didn't know if they were going to find a lot of work for me. This is a lot of questions that come suddenly that were new to me. So I kind of have an agreement with them that I'd be happy to work with them again, but I don't have a firm contract. So right now I'm still actually free to work for the other people. And I also have a good contact with a studio in London. They're called the Future Power Station. And it's the studio that I worked with to help me out on Katy Perry's music deal and other jobs. And they've become friends. You know, we've been working together for quite a few years now on many projects. I still work for the studios. Like, I'm still open to other opportunities. I've had a great experience with Passion Pictures. I don't know if you've heard of them. They do a lot of great work, great advertising, but also different formats. And I've worked with them on a project for Netflix. It was called Love, Death and Robots. So they've been two series of Death and Robots. It's a lovely series of short films, right? Short animated films, sci-fi. And what's amazing about it is that every short film, they're about 10, 15 minutes, has a different director. So they have a completely different story. So it's not like you watch the first episode. There's no link between the stories. And one director that I love, his name is Robert Valley. And I love his work. He's a great animator. He's been around for a while now. He's very respected. And for me, he's a bit of an idol. You know, I love his path. Basically, he's done one of the things I'm trying to do. He's managed to create a style that's recognized, that's strong, and people look at it and say, oh, this is Robert Valley. And people come to him and say, we want Robert Valley. We want your style. And this is... this is a beautiful thing. So I got to work with him on one of his projects as one of the animators. The episode was called Ice. Yeah. And I was like a little kid, you know. It's like, you're one of my heroes. I love working with you.
Yeah.
And he's really chilled, really nice.
That's like
guy.
Dream job, right?
Yeah, it's one of those
Canadian.
Things.
He's a Canadian.
He's Canadian. He's in Vancouver, I believe.
Yeah,
actually.
Like me.
Yeah. So and it was during this, again, it's during the pandemic. So everybody was working from home, but we had a meeting every week and we'd chat. And some of the animators that I knew as well, some of the other animators. And we have similar styles. And one of the things I love is that he's using Photoshop to animate. And it's also my favorite tool for animation. And we totally click on these things because he was like, every other animators use different software. Like I think the official software for this particular production was TV Paint, and everybody was doing TV Paint animation. And I was like, "Can I use Photoshop?" And they were like, "Yeah, no problem. Actually, you know what? Robert Valley uses Photoshop." I was like, "Really? Why?" So he would give me his animation files, you know, all in Photoshop, and I was just like picking it up and keep working with them. And that was so easy, you know.
That must be so cool to actually see like your idol's project files, like not just even working with him, but actually getting to like get his oh my God, like he made this file. I get to open it. I get to see his process, like in the layers and how he animates. Like, did you pick up any tips or skills from him, like working with him? Did you say, I didn't think of doing this or using this technique? And so cool.
When I opened his files, I could see that, okay, this is how he approached these things. This is how he creates his keys, how he does his in-betweening, because he showed me also the reference material they used, and I could see the link between the reference material and how he transforms that into the animation that he's trying to do. And it's a very focused window on his the way he thinks. You know, this is what I was looking at. I was like going into his brain and trying to understand his way of thinking. I love that. And the first time I talked to him, actually, I had to tell him that when I was like years ago, when he was becoming quite famous, and I sent him an email as a little, you know, fan. I said, "Hey, I love your work." You know. And I told him that he replied to my email, which was great. And he was like, "Oh, you're lucky, because usually I don't reply to people." Like, he's too busy nowadays, I guess. Yeah.
I don't normally reply, but. So what did you say to him that made him want to reply? Like, how did you get that little bite?
I think back in the days, right. I showed him some of my work in the link. I said, "Look, this is what I do, and you know, if ever we could work together, I'd love that." And I think he saw some similarities. I think I love his work, and I think it's probably influenced me to some extent. But at the same time, I discovered his style quite late. I had already my style kind of going, and I felt we had a similar, you know, similar direction. So that's why I contacted him, and maybe that's why he replied, because maybe he saw in my work some similarities, and he thought, well, that's you know, with this guy, maybe he will be like me in the future or something, you know. And anyway, so he actually said, because I was in Geneva back in the days, and he was going to Paris, and he said to me, I could maybe just you know, go through Geneva. And I was like, "Oh no, you know, I'm not going to force." I felt kind of like, "Oh my God, I can't do this." Because I was like, "What am I going to say?" I was just a fan, you know. I was like, "Oh, what if we meet in Geneva? Yeah. What am I going to tell him? I'm going to waste his time."
Marry me.
Yeah, exactly.
Turns into romantic comedy. Yeah. I think we have to wrap up, but I have one more question for you, because it just sounds like you've done so many different things, and you've eventually gotten to this point where you're now directing. You got to work with your idol. Like, that's so cool. Did you ever think, like, when you were first starting, you know, back in, you know, when you went to animation school, or when you're doing your first job, like, did you imagine yourself here, or do you think your path kind of change, like you know, like, do you really think that, like, was this always your goal, or has your goal kind of gone back and forth? And
yeah, no, it's true, it's a good question. My ambitions at the beginning were quite different. I think I was thinking about my opportunities in France, and the first thing I did actually before I went and studied was to make a short film. So I felt I wanted to tell stories, and I wanted to make films. And so when I studied animation, it was about animation filmmaking. And we were learning about how to manage a project. And then also we learned about how in France you could find money to make these projects, because you need funds and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So how you could work with producers. There's all sorts of different funds that you can apply for. And
like government grants and funds.
That's right, grants, yeah. That was my frame of mind. I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to make films. You know, the problem is that if you start making films, it's short films. Short films don't usually generate a lot of money. That's the reality of the industry. You can tour festivals around the world, but it'll probably cost you more than you will be making. And that could be a step. Forward to become a director for, I don't know, TV series, films, or music videos and whatnot. That could be a way to getting there. But I guess my dream back then was to make films. I wanted to make feature films. I wanted to create big things. And then reality hits, you know, it's not that easy. Nonetheless, I was really, really pleased with what I did, all these jobs that I got. And I, like I said, I love the challenges and I love the diversity. So I became really, really, happy with what I was doing and what I'm doing now. I really like that, what I'm doing. So now I'm kind of starting to think about it again. Years later, we're looking at nearly, 17 years later. I'm like, maybe now, you know,
come full circle.
Yeah, but I think it will take some time yet. I'm not rushing. I'm not, and if I don't get there, I won't be mostly disappointed. But if I did get there, I would be amazed. If I could one day direct my own episode of Love, Death, and Robots, and maybe one day do something else, that'd be great. That would be great. But hey, we'll see what happens.
No regrets. I like that. Like, even your architecture background, it helped you to learn all those art fundamentals, like things that I think a lot of people struggle with, is that realism and perspective and like making sure that things look good. Like, it's harder for people who start more on the artistic side to then kind of backtrack and do the foundation stuff again. And like, no, I want to make like these cute videos and this, and they don't think about like how much that matters is to make something like architecturally sound, you know, because the characters, you know, it'll break the story, that third wall. If like something looks off in the background or something doesn't look right, it'll feel a little bit wrong. I like that. No regrets. So tell us, Psycho-San, tell us where we can find you. Are you on social media? Where can we find your work?
Sure. I've been on social media for quite a long time now. I've tried so many websites. I think my favorite one is Instagram, actually. This is where I'm the most active, I think. But I've also got an ArtStation, for those who know about ArtStation. But I also have a Patreon if people want to support my work. I've got, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on all these places. But if someone wants to find all these things, they're all in one place on my website. It's psychosan.com. That's as simple as that. I managed to get that domain name. So yeah, so nice. Psychosan.com is where everything is.
Your branding is perfect. Very easy to find. One name. I love it.
Yeah. I totally made up my name, by the way. It's not a real name, of course, but it's unique. And people will find me right away if they type that in. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Tell us about your name. Like, what's the origin? It's cool that you get to pick your own name, because most names are given.
In a way, it created itself. It kind of happened. Okay. So this is how it happened. I was studying in Strasbourg. So we were having a big party, all right? So it was going to be crazy. We were going to invite everyone. And we wrote a letter, you know. Back in the days, we used to write letters. And so we wrote a letter, all of us. We put a little message. We said, hey, come to join us at a party. And we signed. And I signed with my name is Sylvan. But I wrote it in SY20, because 20 sounds like 20 in French. So it's a simplified way of writing my name. But sounds like, it looks like a K, the L, the 2, looks like K-O, so it reads like psycho. And one of those girls, who's still a good friend of mine, her name is Liz, and she said, so you're psycho. And I was like, what? No. Oh, and then I realized, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess, no. So I explained to her the thing, and my friends heard about this, and they started calling me psycho. I was like, so the thing you need to understand is that in French, psycho does not mean what it means in English. So it has no meaning. But my friends started calling me psycho. I was like, all right, then why not? You know, that's what people do. And it became my nickname. And then I went online. I went on these websites and I was looking for a nickname to use on my website. And I wanted to use psycho, but it was taken. And I was into Japanese back in the days. I was learning Japanese. And I was like, I'm going to add a san at the end of it, because I was going to make it sound like a Japanese name. So, and that just became Psycho-San. At first, I was just following other artists. I was not posting anything. And I was like, one day, I was like, maybe I'll post some things. And I did this. I didn't change my name. And people started knowing me as Psycho-San. And I decided to keep it. I was like, all right, I'm Psycho-San now. That's it. And so